Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio, Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to Candidate Interviews and Voter Information, presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. The intention of our programs is to educate and inform listeners about the current elections happening in Shasta County. So I have in the studio today two individuals from the League of Women Voters of the Redding area. We have with us today Susan Morris-Wilson, who's the president, current president, and Joanne Roskowski, who is the secretary and past president. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here. I want to start, I'm going to ask you, Joanne, to let's give a history of the League of Women Voters nationally. How did it get started? All that good stuff.
So the League started in 1920, and it is focused on nonpartisan political activity. It was started as a way to galvanize women to support the passing of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Today, its activities focus on registering voters, providing information to voters via forums and information that's printed or digital these days.
Or radio interviews.
Or radio interviews, that's right. And as well as supporting issues that are important to all people, but especially women, like women's health and reproductive rights. There are 700 local leagues in the United States.
Wow.
And these local leagues are gathered up into state leagues, which then are gathered up into the national league. So we operate at many different levels. And at the local level, we try to focus on issues that are of local importance to women and all voters in Shasta County.
And so Susan, in California, we actually have 61 leagues, and we work together under the League of Women Voters California. And the California League has been around just about as long as the National League.
That's awesome.
And the Redding League has been around since the early 60s.
Ah.
And back in the day, in the 60s, we had over 200 members.
Wow.
Both parties. It was truly a nonpartisan effort back in the day when we first started.
And one of the things I like about the League, too, sometimes you do research projects. Surveys,
we do. We do. Study. We call them studies.
Studies
is our big word. And when we study something, you know, we'll pick actually mostly as a country, sometimes just as California, we'll pick an issue and we'll say, we need to know everything about this issue before we decide how we feel, you know, whether we're for it, against it, don't care, you know, and try and it's all written up so that people can look at it and say, wow, there's all the information that you need. We did one, for example, the local league, back when we were talking about the, Cottonwood issue the use of land in Cottonwood. We did a study and it usually takes a good long time.
Probably months?
Months.
Months, yes.
Can take years, depending.
And then the information is shared how? How do you put that information out to community?
Well, it's posted. It's posted on websites. You can get to it. You can get to it either by knowing that the League of Women Voters Redding did it or by knowing that California did it. You know, just topic search. Or if it's the League of Women Voters, U.S. or California, they have a book that says, these are our policies.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon.
There you go.
We also, if there's a new position that we've worked on, we'll often have a meeting or a forum to explain the local league's position on this issue so that people in the community know what it's all about and perhaps how they can get involved, because positions are not just static documents.
That's right.
Positions are actually a blueprint for action. So if there's a position about, for example, the library, mm-hmm. which is one mm-hmm. of the positions the local league worked on before the Reading Library was built, and the idea was to try to get the county to support the building of the library, well, that's of interest to the whole community. So it's important to share with the community what the league's thinking and feeling and action items would be related to that, so the community can get involved too. It's not just league members mm-hmm. that do things to try to move positions ahead, but the whole community is invited.
Yeah, and I think one that's of
the
powerful.
And one of the current ones that we actually dabbled with was the Charter County issue.
Uh-huh.
So we've had a couple presentations on that, and I think that we have videos of people talking pros and cons on the county charter. Locally, we haven't taken a particular position, but we feel that it's really important for folks to do that. And the one that we're going to do that's coming up is, we call it One Person, One Vote, and it's a discussion of the Electoral College and how it works, why it is the way it is, and it's mainly, in our case, to provide information to folks so that they understand. You know, the Electoral College is kind of an elusive concept mm-hmm. and for many people, and what we want them to do is understand where it came from, why it came, and how it affects today's politics.
Yes, I think that's important because a lot of people go, well, we should throw that out. Or other people will say, you know, I think it's the best thing. And so to really inform ourselves about mm-hmm. what's involved, why it exists, what's the benefits and pros and cons, mm-hmm. you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's important. Mm-hmm. So when I think of the League of Women Voters, you know, I think of them encouraging people to participate in the political process.
Absolutely, positively.
Yeah, educating and informing. So let's pause for a moment. Is it an organization made up of just women?
No. No, we have men members too.
Yes.
The organization is open to everybody. Of course, at its beginning, the ideal that drove it forward was getting women the vote.
Yes.
Because 20 million women in the United States couldn't vote. And so the focus was on women voting. But as time has progressed and women got the vote, then the league branched out into other topical issues of concern to all Americans, not mm-hmm. just women.
Yes.
In fact, when I was on the board, the U.S. League, LWVUS board, we had two men on the board with me.
Good, good. That's what we like.
Mm-hmm.
And let's think about can people become members of the organization? How does that work?
So all they have to do is fill out a form, send in a dues payment, and then they're members of the league. They'll be linked to all our newsletters, get notices of our activities. But because our activities are really open to the general public, we try to make sure that information gets out via all kinds of avenues, not just through our website.
Membership, yeah.
Yeah, that's why we interact with the media to try to get the word out that these are activities that are open to all because they're on topics that should be of interest to all.
We really feel that we're an open club, mm-hmm. per se.
Mm-hmm.
That we welcome members, but we also welcome the public to anything that we do. You know, mm-hmm. we want the work that we put into this to be effective for all the population that votes.
Yes. I'm going to ask you a personal question. Thinking about why you yourself join the League of Women Voters and are active today and have been for some time. I'll start with you, Joanne.
So before I moved to Reading, I actually worked for the federal government for 25 years, and I was in a senior executive position. And in that position, you are not allowed to do anything political.
Mm.
You're not allowed to campaign or promote any political position. So once I retired, I said, okay, this is my chance to get involved in the political process and particularly helping people understand how important it is to vote and how important it is to know who and what you're voting for.
Yeah.
And so the League of Women Voters was just a natural for me. I'm also a poll worker all the time, too, because that's where the rubber meets the road, right,
yeah,
with respect to voting. But the League has given me a wonderful opportunity to do a lot of things I wasn't allowed to do when I was a Fed.
That's good. How about you, Susan?
Well, I joined the League in 1990. And I joined the League when I moved to Reading, actually, also. Before that, I had been mother of a very young child and busy job, hard job. I moved to Reading. It was sort of a semi-retirement, picked up another job in Reading. And then my daughter got very interested in it. So somewhere in the Reading Searchlight, there's a picture of Jennifer, whole top of the front page, carrying a flag to celebrate women's right to vote. It's a cause for me. I've been on the California board 2 or 3 times. I've been on the League of Women Voters U.S. board as the budget chair, the treasurer. And it's just really important to me that people vote, first of all, but second of all, have the background they need to make an informed vote.
Yes.
I wish people didn't vote because their mother was a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah. You know. But they're selecting the person that they think will do the best job.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's important for people to understand, that your forums and the work that you do, you're not endorsing a particular candidate. It's nonpartisan. It's information sharing so that we can educate people about who's running for office. So it really gives these forums give opportunity for the public to show up, for candidates to express and address questions so that people can get a sense of who they might be if they're elected to office. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really critical because sometimes the person that has the most road signs out is not perhaps the best candidate for the job, and someone who hasn't been able to put a road sign at every corner in Shasta County is really the person you want. But you don't know that unless you have a chance mm-hmm. to hear them speak. And particularly in the forums, because we have all the candidates running for a position speaking and answering the same question, you get a really good idea about what their philosophies are and their ideologies and how they would fit in with the ongoing political environment. And you don't get that from a road sign.
Yes.
Right. And we do those forums publicly, but then we also live stream them when we're doing them so that people who can't make it can tune in. And we videotape them and we post them so you can find them on YouTube and you can find them on our website and so on.
I think is important for people to realize that they can tune into them later. If they couldn't make it or couldn't see the live stream, they can look it up and tune in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Get a sense of the individuals running for office. Now, when you have the forums, do you always do a forum for all the candidates that are running for office? How's that work?
We always include everybody that's running for office for that particular thing. So many of the folks that listen in will remember that back in March, we did all 9 supervisors who were running for 3 different districts. 2 of them cleared because the lead candidate got more than 50% of the vote. It had 2 candidates because those are the only 2 candidates left in that particular.
And are you referencing the Shasta County Board of Supervisors?
District 3.
That's correct.
And
so at that forum, you had both candidates there.
That's correct.
Yes. So what happens if you set up a forum or want to do a forum and maybe one of the candidates does not want to do the forum? What happens?
Well, we have a couple different rules about that. If there are only 2 candidates and 1 refuses to come, we don't have the forum, first of all. So we don't have an empty chair that way. Before the election, we had the Shasta Lake City Council, and they had 6 people running for 3 seats, and 1 person could not make it to the event. And so what we asked her to do, this particular candidate, was to send us an opening statement. We have an opening statement for every person, and I read the opening statement for her after the after the other five candidates had read them. And then the other five candidates get to answer questions, do all the stuff. We have never actually Zoomed a candidate in.
Well, you went ahead and had the forum because it was one of six.
One of six. But if it was one of two, we would not have done it.
Well, that makes sense because it would appear in that instance almost as if you're endorsing a candidate if you only have one present.
Yes, exactly. And at a larger level, since we're a nonprofit, it would actually threaten our nonprofit status because we would be endorsing one candidate if there was only one there.
Speaking, yes. This is a segment of Candidate Interviews and Voter Information presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm your producer and host, Lynn Fritz. We're here in conversation with two individuals from the League of Women Voters, Reading area. We have the current president, Susan Morris Wilson, secretary and past president, Joanne Roskowski. So I think it's important for people to realize they can go to the League of Women Voters, especially in the Reading area, because that's Shasta County specific, and they can get information that's available about the candidates running for office as well as other information. What other information might you share with them besides just the candidate forums?
So if you go to our website, you'll find some documents there that are really useful for the upcoming election. One is called the Pros and Cons. So the League of Women Voters California has created a document putting out the pros and cons for the various ballot initiatives.
Okay. It's a study.
Yeah, it's definitely a study. So that's one piece of information. Another one is the voter election guide, which is also put out by the League of Women Voters. So if you go to our website, there's a menu on the left-hand side that says voter information. And so these various documents are all posted there, and you can click on them and then read them online, or you can print them out. We also have copies of all these documents at our forums, so people can pick them up when they leave. The third document that's out there is called Vote with the League. So the pros and cons are completely neutral, pro and con. The league says this is great or not. There's the other document called Vote with the League. Actually, the league takes a stand. This is the league in California because these are California measures that are on our ballot. The league takes a stand on whether it recommends that you vote yes or no on a particular initiative. And it gives the league's rationale for why they're making that recommendation. So those three documents are out there. There are also links on our website and Facebook page to other major news sources like CalMatters, the U.S. League of Women Voters U.S. newsletter, which is monthly, the California newsletter, which is biweekly, I think. And then there's Democracy Docket is out there. So there's lots of other sources of information about the upcoming elections that you can easily get to by going to our website and clicking on those links.
That's awesome.
And then other forums that we do. So we do meet monthly and we focus on a particular topic. We have a speaker, you know, we have a discussion about it and so on. So we do have other things that are going on and we post those as well.
And you meet all around the year.
We do.
When there's an election, then you're really on it.
That you would say that we get exhausted.
Yes, really. And when you do a forum, is there a stipend for the people that participate? How's that work?
You mean the speakers of the event?
No, the people that are facilitating.
No, there is not a stipend.
You're all volunteers.
You know, we're all volunteers. Yeah. We do occasionally, though, stipend a speaker because we want to have the best speaker that we could have.
It's not a candidate that you stipend.
No. Yeah. This would be, for example, we had some speakers about that did a kind of a pro and a con on the Charter County event. And, you know, you could think, well, you might have to pay one of those speakers, but people are actually always pretty enthusiastic about talking to the League of Women Voters. So we don't spend much money on that. We do spend money on videotaping and maintaining our website, you know, because we feel that that's a really strong connection with the community.
So the membership dues help to pay for those sort of events. And can you take donations from the community?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So if they want to support nonpartisan political work that helps to inform and educate the community, League of Women Voters is an organization that really
can
in
do
perpetuity
that.
Since 1920.
Yeah. Right.
Very active.
Here's a plug, an ad plug. We're also part of the North State Giving Tuesday. So people can go out there and find us. Every November as part of the many, many worthwhile charities and NGOs that are out there.
Yes.
And we have received grants locally as well. You know, I think the Reading Rancheria has given us a grant before. McCollum Foundation has given us a small grant before. So one of the issues that has been a problem for us in the past, not so much currently, was equipment. You know, where do you have the equipment to do the videotape things? How do you have
microphones,
the sound microphones? Yeah. And of course, there was the day when you had to have a projector and a computer.
Yes.
You know, so people have always been generous enough to keep us on the road.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And I think it's important to encourage young people to recognize who the League of Women Voters, especially women, as they get into the voting age and participate, that there's that legacy of remembering when women could not vote,
mm-hmm.
and since 1920 can vote. And, you know, many people around the world do not have the opportunity or privilege of voting to say who is in leadership in government. So I always encourage, especially young people, to help themselves understand the process and to engage in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you hear people say, one vote doesn't matter. My vote won't matter. And I think it's critical to understand, yes, all votes matter.
All votes matter. And we had an election last March, I think it was. In March.
March of
the recall, I was thinking of the recall of Kevin Cry, and there were less than 100 votes that made a difference there,
mm-hmm.
Whether he continued as a member of the Board of Supervisors or was not continued as a member of the Board of Supervisors. So I think your point is really important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every vote counts. And to go back just a little bit to what you said was about the young folks, we know young people are not voting. They're not even registering, you know. And this is a big issue, and we talked about it at the League recently, and we thought maybe next year, after the election period was over, we would really start for the next 2 years working on registration of youth. And I think that's a national movement with the League of Women Voters right now.
I hope so. I know it's important. It's a very different world, and I think it's... I always think of Gloria Steinem and her talking about... Why is it we as a culture, we would hope that we pass the baton on to the next generation, but she would said that so many times we're relearning the same things, we mm-hmm. lose that understanding or that experience. So I think it's important that we really work to get the young people engaged in the voting process.
Absolutely.
And in California, it's really easy for young people to register when you're 16 or 17.
16. When you're 16.
You can go online and just put in your information under the California State website. And then when you turn 18, you're automatically registered. And so that's so incredibly easy for young people, but they have to be engaged. They have to feel that things are important to them because there are many things these days that young people care about.
Yes.
And so understanding how voting can impact issues they really care about is really important. And that's why we're hoping to make an education to the young mm-hmm. push in this coming year.
Yes.
It sets them up for a whole lifetime of being civically engaged if you start young and become engaged at an early age.
I can remember a friend of mine when I first started to vote, Well, actually, we went down to the post office. He took me down to the post office and got the form and worked with me to fill it out and get it mailed in because I was intimidated. Actually, I've never been to a poll. I've always done an absentee. And his willingness to help me really empowered me because previous to that, I had not voted. So I think it's important. Jay, when you think about, you said at 16, they can pre-register to vote. So let's imagine that someone is out there listening and they said, well, I haven't registered. And November 5th, Tuesday is our vote date. And if they're 18 by November 5th,
right,
they have the right to vote.
Correct.
They do. And they should register.
And if they don't pre-register, what happens the day of voting? Can they go to the clerk's office?
So they can go to the clerk's office, or since I work the polls, I know this, you can walk into a polling place and you can register on that day and vote.
And how do you what documents do you need to show that you're 18? Would a driver's license do it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. So I think it's important.
For some kids, that would also be student ID is bring a parent that says, yes, this is my child.
Yes, so that they have something that documents who they are and with their parent can sign in. I think that's important to be empowered to be able to have a voice in our democratic voting system.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes for all voters, actually, not just young people.
Yes, that's
but,
true.
There tends to be a great increase in interest in presidential election years.
Yes.
And so having worked the polls now many years, I can tell you many adults walk in and say, I never registered to vote, but I want to vote this year. Can I vote? And yes, they can.
I think it's interesting in Shasta County, we have a very high rate of people registered to vote in Shasta County, as it happens. What we also have is a low rate of people voting.
So they're registered, but they don't show up.
Yeah.
And in California, doesn't everyone who's registered receive a ballot?
Yes, they do, by the mail.
It's mailed to them.
Yes.
And they can fill it out and mail it back.
That's correct. It used to be we had to have absentee ballots, and you had to say, give a reason and so on, why you couldn't vote. But now everybody can mail in their ballot that's mailed to them, or they can take it to a drop box, and the drop boxes will open almost immediately after the ballots are
sent out.
And the ballots are going to be sent out starting on the 7th of October. So people can expect their ballot soon after. You can vote, drop it in the drop box. You can take it to the election office, or you can mail it. So you have a lot of opportunities. And I think that was a good thing. It was a result of COVID, actually, the entire mail-in ballot. But for example, Oregon has had that for years. And they have a very high return of registered voters voting.
And I think part of the reason I facilitate and create these programs is to really encourage people to engage in the process. Ballot comes right to you, fill it out, mail it back, drop it by a ballot box, whatever. If you're not registered, get registered. It's an opportunity to have a voice, and it's a very powerful thing to be able to be part of what's happening in our society. The other thing I wanted to ask you about in regards to voting, let's imagine someone moves. What do they need to do if they move?
So, register.
Yeah.
re-register, change, update.
Yeah, you have to re-register if you've moved because the post office will not forward your ballot. Even if you've turned in a forward my mail, the post office will not do that. So you have to re-register. And if you do it by October the 22nd, then you will actually get a mail ballot because there will be time for them to get one out to you. If you can't re-register by October the 22nd, then your best bet is to go to the elections office on Market Street or go on the day of the election to your polling place.
And pick up your ballot.
Yeah, and you can vote right there at the polling place.
Yeah. So anytime you change your address, you need to re-register.
Right, and this is we've worked on that this year. This is an issue for older adults who move out of their home into a some kind of other living situation,
mm-hmm.
and they think, oh, I'm still in Reading. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But you do have to worry about
yes.
it, you know, and we have registered quite a few people who thought they were registered but really weren't. We targeted the very large facilities that we have in Shasta County.
And I'm going to pause here for a moment and do a station ID. This is Candidate Interviews and Voter Information, presented by KKRN, 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. We have in conversation today, we have in the studio the President, Susan Morris Wilson, Secretary and past President, Joan Roskowski, from the League of Women Voters Reading Area. Just before the break, Susan, you were talking about places that, you know, people need to be mindful that they have to register anytime they move. So what are some of the places where you've gone to help people re-register?
Well, we've done outreach at a variety of places. We've gone to a lot of assisted living organizations, places where older adults live. We've gone to Shasta College, places where kids are.
Yeah, youth.
And then we take advantage of every single registration opportunity for if there's a forum going on about something else, the league will show up with their little table and we'll have all the forms and a couple ladies to help you actually provide personal assistance to folks that way. Another piece of this is people can register to vote by going to register to vote. Just
online.
Type in register to vote online and it will take you to the Secretary of State's office. And it's actually an easier form to fill out than the form that you fill out
in person. Yeah.
Because it asks the questions much more directly and they're not all laid out on a piece of paper and complicated.
Yeah, we also go to the farmer's market.
The farmer's market.
On Saturday, yeah. as mm-hmm. well as the first Saturday of the month at the library, because mm-hmm. that's when they have their big book sale and tends to have higher volume. And the advantage of having a physical presence in a place mm-hmm. is that in addition to having the voter registration forms and helping people fill one out if they need one, we also have other literature there. Mm-hmm. So we'll have things like the pros and cons for the ballot measures, the easy voter guide, which you can get online, but sometimes it's just easy to pick it up while you're registering. And so that's the advantage of having some physical locations.
Yeah, and physical material mm-hmm, to hang on to and look through.
Yes. We spend a lot of money printing. Just saying.
Yeah. Important printing, though.
Important printing. Important
yes.
printing.
Yes.
Yes. Very important.
So, Susan, from your perspective, looking at look before we vote. What is
look
it
before we vote.
Yeah.
So there are a couple different things I would really like people to think about, and that is when you look at the ballot measure on your voter information, you need to think about what brought this to be a ballot measure.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three different ways really that they come. One is as a legislative statute. And a legislative statute, and we have quite a few of these this time, is a statute that is a law that was passed by the legislative body, our state legislature. And they ask the people to consent to that law. You know, yes or no.
Yeah.
And that doesn't apply to every law that gets passed, I can assure you. But to some of the really more iffy ones, I think that they do that. And then we have a legislative constitutional amendment. So when we have a constitutional amendment in California, it's initiated by the legislature if it passes both houses by a 2/3 vote. And then the constitutional amendment does not need the governor's signature, but becomes a part of the Constitution only after the electorate, all of us out here who are voting, approve it at the next general election. So that's pretty important too.
I would guess.
And we do have one of those at least on this one. And then the one that people are most familiar with is the initiative. And the ballot initiative process gives California citizens a way to propose a law. And what they do is they collect a certain number of, and the Secretary of State tells you how many valid signatures you have to have. So the steps to do that are you write the proposed law, You submit it to the Attorney General for a title and for a summary. You then can circulate it to get those signatures that you need. Those are the people that you see parked there with a table and mm-hmm. saying, sign this, sign this. You have to think about it before you sign those things. And then the signatures are turned into the county election officials for verification, and they're either qualified or not qualified by the Secretary of State. And then the California voters get to vote. And I think it's really important that people understand that this is a lengthy, people-driven way of making law.
It's important, I think, that people recognize that we're really commenting and making decisions that have gone before the state legislature, mm-hmm. and they're asking for our input, yes mm-hmm. or no. Should we do this or should we not? Mm-hmm. And that it's important for us to know the whole aspects of what they're proposing and make our decision have our voice.
Yeah. And there's a few of those on our current ballot. The other thing that I encourage people to do is you need to read that ballot measure.
Yeah.
You need to read it. You not just look at the title and go, oh, I'm for that, or I'm mm-hmm. not for that, or I always vote no if it's a bond. You know, those are some of the things that we hear. So what we really want is people to look at what it accomplishes. Do you agree with those goals? Are they consistent with your idea about how the government works? Who are the sponsors and opponents of the bill? Because that is sometimes a really good clue about where it's coming from and why it's there. Is it written well enough mm-hmm. that you can vote? You know, some of them are very confusing, and many things pass, many initiatives in particular pass, and then never go into law because they're not well written enough and they're challenged. And if they don't make their way through the
process,
legal challenge,
yeah.
they don't become law.
Which is probably a good thing.
Which is probably a good thing. And it's one of those things that we do to make care about our laws, you know.
Yeah.
And I just want them to know that they also need to look at where is the money coming to do this. It's so important for us to keep track of the money. You know, earlier this year we had Proposition 1, which had a very large bond measure attached to it, $6 billion. I want people to know that in California now there's almost $100 billion of unsold bonds.
Wow.
And adding to it is not necessarily the best way to get money.
Yeah.
You know, because the bonds aren't money. The bonds are things that get sold, and then the money comes into the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's really important that people understand how bonds work.
And particularly that the people of the state pay for a bond. The bonds must produce interest. So if you send the state $100 for a bond, you're expecting to get your $100 back plus interest. Well, where does that interest come from? It comes from the state.
From the taxpayers.
The taxpayers' money. So just signing on to a bond means that there's a commitment that the state is going to be sending you interest payments for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years.
And most of them are 30 years.
So it's kind of like interest on a car loan, right? It doesn't seem like a lot for the first payment, but when you figure out for 10 years you're going to be paying interest to have this car, it really adds up to the price of the car.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about when you look at bonds and factor that in. Now, a lot of the information in the pros and cons will in fact state how many years this bond is going to be paying interest and how much more money that's going to cost you.
That's important to know.
Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to say about looking at these things, I talked about amending the Constitution, you know, and is this something that really needs to go in the Constitution? A lot of times something appears that's a legislative constitutional amendment and you think that's a law that we might want to change. That's not something that needs to be in the Constitution.
Right.
You know, thinking of the value of the Constitution. Our Constitution, somebody told me, was 191 pages.
Wow.
Just saying.
Yeah, and I think what people don't realize, in order to change that constitution, then you have to go back through the process
That's right.
In order to change it. So
with a two-thirds vote.
With a two-thirds vote. And to always recognize that sometimes you can accomplish things without changing the constitution. You don't have to change the constitution to have change occur. I think it's important. Good points about things to think about, look at before you vote. So, Joanna, I also want to ask you about, we have the, what's coming up in the election, we have the candidates to vote on. This is a presidential election, too. And what about the measures that we're hearing?
So, Susan's been talking, about how something gets onto your ballot, right? That's not a candidate's name for a position. And so there are levels of measures that get onto your ballot. One is at the state level. And right now, they're called statutes or initiatives. Right now, there's 10 of them. Five have been put on the ballot by the legislature, which is what Susan had explained. And then five are community-driven or citizen-driven initiatives. And so those 10 items are things that everybody's going to see on their ballot.
Yes. Like
everybody in California is going to see those 10. Then there are measures at the local level, and there's a process for people getting something onto the ballot at the local level. And so there are actually 14 measures that are theoretically on the ballot, but you may not see all 14 of them because 10 of them are to provide money for local school districts. So if you live in the Pacheco School District, you'll see the measure that's written for that. But if you live in the...
elsewhere.
You're not going to see it. It's
yeah.
not going to be on your ballot. The thing that everybody's going to see on their ballots are measures P and Q. And P and Q were proposed by the Board of Supervisors and have been put on the ballot by them. This is going to affect everybody in Shasta County. So everybody in Shasta County's ballot is going to have the measures P and Q. P is about the power of eminent domain, which is a situation where if the city or county or state wants to build a highway, and that highway needs to go through your property, then the state or the city can declare eminent domain, meaning that the good of the whole is more important than your local interest in this area, and they can take it, but usually they pay you for it, right?
Well, I think always they pay you for it.
Market value, isn't it supposed to be?
Market value.
Right. This particular P measure is a little bit complicated to understand, but it basically says that the county cannot take a private person's land under eminent domain and then turn around and give it or sell it to another private entity. Okay. And according to the statistics, that's been done once or twice in the last 25 years in Shasta County. So it's not something that occurs all the time. And so it's kind of an obtuse measure.
Pretty unusual.
Yeah. But the reason it's really important is the Board of Supervisors wants this incorporated into our county charter, which means that would be the rule for the county going forward. And so I encourage everybody to read up more information about that. The second measure...
I want to ask you a question about P or clarification.
Yeah.
So this measure would, if it's voted on and becomes law, then... a person or the government could do eminent domain for something they feel is in public interest, and it could only be used then for public interest. It cannot be sold to a private party.
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure I had that right.
Thank you.
Then measure Q?
So Measure Q is related to the, again, this is a measure that would add something to our charter, right, to the county charter. And so basically it says that the Board of Supervisors has the authority to appoint or declare a special election to fill a seat for an elected official who leaves before their term is over. Okay.
Okay. Wouldn't there be cost involved in doing something like that?
Yes, because you have to pay for the election.
Yeah.
So if it's a countywide election, it will cost tens of thousands of dollars.
And who would be paying that? Is it part of, I mean, would we be taxed for that, or do you know?
It would come out of the general fund, and so the general fund would have to have that money in it. Otherwise, I don't see any place that, I mean, the general fund is going to get that money short of taxing the citizens. Now, that's going to be kind of tricky because in order to get a tax through, you have to have it on a ballot and an election. And if you're dealing with a vacancy for something important, like let's say the sheriff, right? Well, you can't wait a year to go through the whole elections process. So the default will be the Board of Supervisors will appoint a person. And so
that's with this new measure?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So without this measure, that vacancy would be open till the next election?
No. It has two options.
Yeah.
You can appoint, the Board of Supervisors can appoint, or they can hold an election. Elections cost money.
Yes.
It is less likely that we will have a costly way of filling things. It's probable that it will be I would guess that it's probable. Makes financial sense, perhaps, or perhaps not, depending on who has left the office. You know, so it's pretty tricky. I think part of the issue that people are looking at right now is that we've had several elected people leave office.
Yes, yes. So I want to make sure I understand this. With Measure Q, the Board of Supervisors would be empowered to hold a special election to fill a vacancy in an elected office. Uh-huh. So currently, the status is if an elected official leaves office before the end of their term, who appoints a replacement?
Susan? The Board of Supervisors.
Board of Supervisors.
So that's the second part of that Measure Q. It's an either, it gives them both powers for the charter county. For power number one, you may appoint a person to that position, or you may hold an election.
That's what Measure Q is, either or?
Yes.
But what I'm trying to say is, what do we have today?
We basically have the same thing, but it's not codified in a charter. So once you put it in the charter, this is like the constitution for the county.
Yes.
So then you have only the option of supervisor appoint or election. Right now, of course, they have appointed a person as the registrar of voters, right?
Correct.
There was a search, and there were candidates, and there were interviews, and then they appointed a person. They considered slightly the idea of holding an election, but then pretty quickly dismissed that.
Well, it takes time to do an election.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm confused as to why this is necessary.
Yes. That's a bit confusing, as is Section P, as Measure P. It's confusing why that even needs to be put into the charter, because that's the standard mode of operation now for both of these issues.
It's the California code currently for the way that the Board of Supervisors in the 56 counties work.
So has the League of Women Voters, Reading area, or made a statement about either one, or that they're just providing the information?
We are providing information.
Okay, good. That's what I want to understand.
If you go out to the elections site, the Shasta County elections. And there is a drop-down menu for voter information. You can see there not only statements by every candidate that's running for an office, but you can also see an explanation of measures P and Q. And if you're willing to read, there's lengthy explanations about why it was put, why it's being proposed for the charter, and there are opposing arguments out there for why people think it shouldn't be in the charter. And so that would be the place to really see a pro and con about doing this. The league is not taking any position on this, and I personally think I can't even figure out why we're doing it, but that's my personal opinion.
So to have that more in-depth information, where would they go?
So you go to Shasta County, okay? You just go to the website for Shasta County, and then there's a listing of departments.
Yes.
So you go to the Elections Department, and if you click on that, there's lots of really useful information, but at the very top, it has voter information. And if you click on that, then you'll get a drop-down, a list of all the candidates, the statements by the candidates, a list of all the measures, what they are, what they're going to do, what they're going to cost, as well as these measures P and Q. There's lengthy documentation that has to be submitted before something can even get on our local measure section of the ballot. And it's all out there, but it takes a bit of time to read. And so if you want to know, why are we doing this, then the arguments for and the arguments against are out there, and you can read them.
Excellent. If you just joined us, this is a segment of candidate interviews and voter information presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. We're here in conversation with two individuals from the League of Women Voters Reading area. We have Susan Morris Wilson, who's the president, Joanne Ruskowski, who is the secretary and past president. I'm learning a lot. I know for me, oftentimes when I go to the elections website, I just type in the search engine Shasta County elections, and it takes me right there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And then during the election, you know, they'll do the counts. They'll present what the current count is of the ballots. And one of the things before we run out of time, too, you mentioned, Joanne, you worked as a poll worker.
Yes.
And so why a poll worker for you?
Again, when I retired and could get more politically involved, it seemed a great way to contribute time and energy to the political process in a very direct but nonpartisan way.
Right? Yeah, support it.
And Shasta County always needs poll workers. And it's a great job. It's a long day from 6 in the morning till 9 at night, for which you get paid $100. but it's a wonderful experience. It's a wonderful experience to talk to voters, to help them understand what they need to do when they get to a polling place, particularly now because everybody gets a mail ballot. You can't just walk into a polling place and say, I want to vote here, give me a ballot, because first they need to surrender their mail ballot because nobody gets to vote twice. And so you get to interact with voters. You never ever get involved in discussing candidates or issues or measures, but it's to enable every single person that walks into a polling place to vote. That is the mantra. Everybody gets to vote.
And if I could just throw in a little something here, that's one of the issues that faced us when the Board of Supervisors said we're not going to have machines. The Secretary of State immediately stepped in and said, oh, yes, you are, because some disabled people need those machines to vote. And that's one of the reasons that voting machines started years ago, you know, because people couldn't sit and mark their ballot. They couldn't ask Joanne, for example, to mark their ballot.
Yeah.
So voting machines are really critical, and people don't understand that they too have a history in why they exist. They weren't just invented, you know, to to hide ballots or whatever you might think, you know, they were invented so that every person could vote.
That, I think, is important. Everyone could participate in the democratic process. Yeah, I think that's critical. You know, we're coming down to the last couple minutes of our program. If people want to reach out to the League of Women Voters of Reading area, there's the website, lwv.org.
If you go to if you type in League of Women Voters Reading, you will get to us.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to remember the title, the exact language. Another way to get to us is to email us, and you can email us at LWVRA, RA stands for Reading Area, 2022, because that's the when we got the email, at gmail.com. And Joanne is the trusty dusty lady that answers that.
Good. I'm going to have you give us that email address again, because I know a lot of people like to tune in by email.
Right. So it's lowvra2022@gmail.com.
And that's for the League of Women Voters Reading
area.
Yeah, so you can tune in, and Joanne Roskowski will answer that and get back to you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And we also have a Facebook page. Again, if you put the League of Women Voters Reading in your search bar, it will pop right up. And if you post a question there, we'll also answer your questions off Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Or they can message that because it's a Facebook account.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And our encouragement, we're coming down to the last few minutes of our program. The encouragement is vote. Educate yourself. Inform yourself. Vote and know what you're voting for.
Exactly. Take the time to read the information that is available about whatever it is that you're interested in, even if it's a candidate.
Yes. I want to thank Susan Morris Wilson, current president, Joanne Roskowski, the secretary and past president, League of Women Voters Reading area. Thank you so much for coming in, sharing your knowledge. Thank you for your commitment to the democratic process. I want to thank the League of Women Voters nationally, statewide, and our Reading area for all the work you do in encouraging us to participate in the democratic process. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to this segment of Candidate Interviews and Voter Information presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. The encouragement is get out there and vote.
Thank you, Lynn, so much.
Thank you.